and welcome to episode 44 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today, we're live at Origins.
Yeah! Welcome, people! My favorite podcast!
And we'll be talking about the games we played and a few we haven't played yet, but would have already brought. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, Shane Paul, George, and Adam Harrison. And welcome to our newest patron, Jennifer Engelbrecht. And also a huge thank you to all our other patrons as well.
Thank you, Josh. And thank you, you guys. That was an amazing, amazing. Two people in the audience made all that noise.
Yeah, I mean, it totally wasn't self-engineered before we even started. No, I mean, you didn't say to them, like, act like there's 50 of you when there's, like, six.
I didn't.
No, you totally that, didn't say that.
Totally organic.
I'm really surprised.
Yeah. I think it worked out really well.
Yeah.
So, the people are here for one thing and one thing only, to find out who won Rex versus Minions. So
it's an awesome game.
It is. And everyone who came in, they got to enter, and I warned them that they probably wouldn't win, and that warning came true. So nobody here won, but Justin Weber did win. I'm going to email you, Justin. Who knows when, but if you hear this and you can email me, we'll get that in the mail to you and get it soon. We are live at Origins, but we're still looking forward to new things too. So Gen Con is coming up in 10 weeks. We will be live there as well, Friday, August 18th at 6 o'clock. I actually checked the tickets there. We're about 25% sold out on that one.
Really?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, and when I say sold out, it's air quotes because it's free.
Oh,
but as far as tickets are concerned, if you want to reserve tickets.
How many seats are there?
More than 10.
Okay.
Less than 200. More than 10 and less than 200.
There's 40 seats.
Okay.
So we're about 11 sold at the moment.
Okay.
I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but I'm just saying there's only 40 seats. So if you're interested in seeing us at Gen Con, and you want to reserve a ticket.
It's blown through my expectations.
Yeah.
So
no, really.
That's amazing.
It's five times what we have here. So
yeah.
All good. another convention I want to mention is Roll20Con, which as you hear it, as you hear this episode, it's going to be in like 3 or 4 days. So we drop on Tuesday. Roll20Con is the following Saturday, Sunday. If you want more information about that, listen to our side chat from last week. And you'll hear all kinds of interesting things. This is an online con. Anyone can join. It's free to join. They're trying to beat their record and have 20,000 people playing online games all at one time. So that one should be interesting and fun. If you are new to the show, welcome. And if you're not new, then you know that an off-topic tends to go fairly long. However, this time it's a record short off-topic. 3 minutes, 7 seconds, counting the intro music, because we are immediately going on topic so we can talk about a whole bunch of stuff about Origins. So everyone sitting in the audience will not hear this music.
In this episode, we're talking about Origins Game Fair, the games we've seen, and hopefully some live questions and comments from the audience as well. Let's get to it.
All right. We have been on a mission for the past 2 days, and we're pretty exhausted for that.
Yeah.
My feet hurt.
Yeah. We spent all of Thursday and all of Friday going and finding all of the little gems and games and what people have been talking about and playing and demoing games so that we could say, okay, these are the good ones and these are the bad ones. But we don't necessarily do that, so we're just going to say these are the ones we liked. And we found a few that I didn't even know existed that I definitely want to play again. So let's just first go into, this is your first Origins, Kitty.
This is my first Origins. This is my first game convention ever.
And what do you think of Origins?
It's fun. I had a lot of fun. I think my favorite part has been roaming the dealer hall, just seeing what's out there, what's new.
You went on a shopping spree yesterday.
I did go on, not too bad of a shopping spree. It wasn't Chris level shopping spree, but I did buy a lot more games than I anticipated purchasing.
Yeah, I just kind of stood behind you and you're like, should I get this? I'm like, well, if you don't, I'm going to. And then apparently that just said, okay, I got it.
Chris played devil on my shoulder for a lot of yesterday.
I remember asking Sydney at the end of the day, I was like, did Chris hit his normal exorbitant amount that he spends on games? She was like, yeah, he was a little over it. So your habit is not getting any better, Chris.
Actually, I don't think so, though.
No?
Because, all right, so the one game that I found here that I didn't know even existed, and there's only like 6 copies a day, is Masters of Orion, the board game. If you're unfamiliar with Masters of Orion, it's a 4X game that is, it's an iPad game, and it's kind of, it's just really cool.
And it's like science fiction based. It looks like, I mean, I've never seen this thing before, but it looks pretty sweet. The art's cool.
Yeah. So basically the way Masters of Orion works is you choose a race, you're building up your fleet, you're building up your economic power, you're exploring things. You may, fight other races right. as you're going through, and right. you can dominate the universe in several ways, by military, by diplomacy. Basically everyone agrees that yes, you're the supreme leader.
Sounds good.
This is an hour long board/card version of the game. Again, somehow flew under my radar because it's also like a seal of excellence from the Dice Tower, which they don't their Dice Tower seal on many things.
Yeah, high accolade.
So when I got here, I saw it, and Cryptozoic is the one who sells it, and they only had like 6 copies. And I'm like, this one's sitting on their table saying sold out for today. I'm like, well, when are you going to have more? It's like, oh, we'll have more tomorrow. We'll have 6 copies. I'm like, ugh. Because at Gen Con, the same thing happened with Harry Potter, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, we have 50 copies. And there's just a swarm of people.
Oh, it was like Black Friday. There were like people elbowing each other out of the way. And it was like, this big chant going on before you went into the thing, like, we're coming, we're coming. And I was like, oh my God, what is this?
But yeah. So that's Gen Con.
Yeah.
See you there in 10 weeks. Origins is way more chill. So I got up this morning, 9 o'clock, after staying up till 2:30.
This is the most motivated I've seen you to get up early, ever.
I had faith that I would be able to do it. So I was exhausted, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm set the alarm. These guys, Josh and Sydney, they came in probably an hour or two after me. I was completely sleeping. So I woke up and they were still sleeping. I'm like, all right, I can do this. I can make it. Speed walking to the hall. I get there and just like casually walk up. There's the 6 copies sitting there. Nobody's even anywhere around. I'm like, can I have one of those? Like, yeah, sure. Here you go. I'm like, great.
Yeah. Is there a trick to this? That's amazing.
I love Origins.
Accessible. I like it.
So we haven't got a chance to play it yet. Oh. Because today Kitty found Tournament at Camelot.
Yes.
So we must play this.
I think it's a really fun game. Chris and Josh were not as big fans of it.
Well, describe the game a little
bit. So it is a trick-taking game where basically each round that you play, you put out a card, and instead of the highest card taking the trick, the lowest card takes the trick because it is a battle. You're fighting a battle. You're all throwing out a weapon. So clearly the highest weapon wins. The lowest weapon loses the fight and takes the damage from the weapons on the table. So the first round plays pretty much straightforward like that. Each player has their own card that gives them a unique power. So there is a little bit to the first round where each player does something a little bit different. But with each successive round, the lowest health player gets one of these god power cards.
And they are god power-ish.
They change the game.
They're so overpowered. I think, in my opinion, that like some of them anyway, in fact, maybe 50% of them. I was like, what? I don't take any damage for this whole round? This is crazy.
Well, that was your character power.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
But you only got to do it for one round.
There were cards just like that. There was a card where you do double damage for a whole round. But as all these new rules kept coming out, for me anyway, I think it might have been because I was a little bit hungover from playing, what was it? We played so much Werewolf last night.
Witch Hunt we played.
Oh, and Witch Hunt. And so my brain wasn't working as fast. And so I was struggling with all the rules that kept coming out. So I wasn't a huge fan. But maybe if I gave it another play when I'm completely sober, I would like it more. We'll see.
So Spencer actually came up with a kind of good descriptor when I was telling him about this game. He said it sounds like a legacy game on speed, where with each round you add more rules. So the first round is fairly straightforward, fairly simple. But with each round, you add a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. So by like round 3 or 4, there's like 18 powers on the table. There's stuff going left and right.
But powers.
You're keeping track of the cards right in front of you, and you only have to track 1 or 2 rules per round.
Right.
Which isn't so bad. And the more you get to know the game, I bet the easier it is to deal with those powers coming out.
I enjoyed it. And the interesting thing about it is taking tricks causes damage to your character. So that's how the first person who dies, the other of the other players that are surviving, the person with the highest health wins. But if you're in the lead, you don't get these cool powers. The powers are basically the catch-up mechanic to it. So if you're behind, you get all these cool powers, where if you're in the lead, like I was for much of the game, you don't get anything. You just have the highest life. Until everybody starts using powers and you go from having 210 life to negative 20 life in a single round. So that was my thing. It's like, it feels like if you're winning, you don't get the cool powers. But if you're losing, you do get the cool powers. So I just need to play it again and lose, and then it'll be a lot more fun. So that was Tournament of Camelot, which honestly I've never heard of before. This is a game by WizKids. It's says 3 to 6 players. It played about 40 minutes or so. It felt a little longer because you have a hand of 12 cards, so there's 12 tricks, and then there's multiple rounds. Most of the characters have this special ability that triggers somewhere in your life track. So mine triggered at 200 life, which I never triggered because I went from 210 to dead.
Your companion.
Yeah.
So you have a protagonist and a companion, and your companion unlocks.
Yeah. But for an asymmetric... I need to make sure I'm using these terms right. For an asymmetric trick-taking game, it is an interesting twist on trick-taking games. And there is a two-player variant as well. It says 3 to 6 on the box, but the rule book has a two-player variant where I think you play with like a phantom player, right?
You lose one of the suits.
Okay, so you just remove a suit and you just play.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, a two-player trick game is kind of like war, as Spencer mentioned that in a previous episode, but I think because of all the different powers and abilities, this one adds a little bit more depth to it. Just in the way you can have to follow. If you can't follow, you're discarding cards and taking damage from that. So I did enjoy it. I want to play it again. I want to know what all the cards are. I think the strategy is lose at the beginning so you can kill everyone else at the end with your super god powers.
That's about right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we mentioned Witch Hunt, and I want to touch on that a little bit.
So, yeah, it's like a variant of Werewolf, which is a social deduction game if you haven't heard of it. And honestly, I actually like this game a bit better than Werewolf. There are tons of extra roles, just like you would have in Ultimate Werewolf, but they seem more strategic. And the cool thing about this game is when you die, you can still take part in the game. So if you die and you're good, you're an angel, and you can kind of save a particular person so that if the witches target someone, you try and guess who they're going to target. And then if you're evil and you die, you're a demon, and you can kind of meddle with the classic seer power. So the seer might check someone and the demons have meddled and changed whether that person reads as good or bad. But it felt like there was more information. My gripe with Werewolf, as much as I love the journey and socializing and meeting people, it's just like, everyone has their theory. Like, oh, it's totally them because of that leg twitch, and it's totally them because they did this and that and the other. And no one knows. No one knows what's going on. And there's just no information. And at least in this game, you're like, okay, there's something to work out here.
Yeah.
You know, and lots of people are revealing their roles very quickly because your role is not attached to your allegiance. You know, you can be a watchman, either good or bad.
Right.
So yeah, I really loved it, and I think I'll be playing a lot more of it.
Yeah, that was my strategy. Now, Kitty did not play with us because she doesn't hang out in the Deception Room with us.
I don't.
Yeah. If you ever come to Origins and you like any kind of Deception game, one of the coolest things about Origins, and Gen Con has this too, but I think the Origins one is better, to be honest. Starting around 6 o'clock at night or so and going on until 6 a.m. usually, just nonstop, is deception game after deception game after deception game. Now, in previous years, it used to be Werewolf, you know, and there'd be a couple other, like, you know, splinter groups. This year, it went from the Werewolf Room to the Deception Room, where they have all kinds of different deception games. So we met the designer of Witch Hunt. He's like, oh, he tells us that he was watching our group play Werewolf, and we were like so passionate about it. He's like, I want them to play my game. So he came over and he's like, come play this game. You know, it's a little different. There's some extra things there. So we're like, okay, we'll take a look at it. And at first, it was a little bit, okay, everyone's getting a special role, kind of Ultimate Werewolf, lots and lots of rules to remember. And it's really not, because every card has some text on it, so you're always going to be reading your card. But you only really have to deal with your information, and then the moderator needs to know what's going on. And since the designer was moderating, he had a pretty good idea of what was going on.
I was going to say, that sounds pretty easy then.
Exactly. But the fact that the roles were separated from the good and evil, I just went around and it's like, okay, what role are you? And people are like, well, I don't think I should tell you. I'm like, well, what does it hurt to tell me? And I just started getting all this information about different roles and then cross-checking. And you actually have real information. I didn't have to read someone to say if they were lying or not. I could determine if someone was lying. I'm this role. Well, that person just told me they were that role. I know that two people don't exist. One of them's lying. How can I cross-confirm? And that's how I was kind of sussing people out.
More deduction, less social. But yeah, still social.
But still social.
Yeah. Less, I mean, accusatory. All games are social, though, if you're really at a table playing with people.
Yep. So that's Witch Hunt. Level 99 has picked up this game. So if you are interested, if you like the werewolf genre, it is a really cool game. It does play, I think it plays well in smaller numbers as well as big numbers. Werewolf, you usually, at a con game, you're looking at 15 people. We were playing 12 people and it felt like completely fine at that size. Like you weren't missing anything out. And I think it would actually play down to 8 with all the different roles and that figuring out. So, Witch Hunt, I have not picked it up yet, but I'm going to.
Definitely one worth getting.
Yeah. So, all right, Kitty, which ones do you want to talk about next?
Century Spice Road has been on our map for a while. I think we were just talking about it randomly during our Board Game Geek episode. It somehow came up and we've been looking for it ever since. So we finally picked it up yesterday and played around. Yep. And that was really fun.
Yeah. So this is the one where this was Kitty's first purchase at a con ever, right?
Yes. Yeah. My very first purchase.
So I was going to go and just buy it because I knew this game was hot. I'm watching it on the BGG list. And I was just going to go over and buy it. And then she saw it and she's like, oh, I like the art. And she's like, I think I'm going to buy this. I'm like, okay. And should I get the playmat? Yeah.
I was standing next to Chris. So, of course, I got the playmat, which actually was really helpful. I would highly recommend getting the playmat because it has a slot for each card. And you're keeping 5 cards in a row on top and 6 cards in a row on bottom. And it matters where they are in the row. And you have to slide and remember to bring them out each time. And the playmat made that so much more helpful. My only complaint about the playmat is that all of the spices are way to one side. So if you're sitting on the wrong side of the table from that, we were throwing cubes back and forth every which way.
But I think the playmat made it look really cool too. So Century Spice Road, if you're not familiar with it, I want to say it's Splendor-like, but
it is a bit Splendor-like.
It is a bit. Yeah. But there's a lot of differences as well. Like it's Splendor because it's easy to learn, easy to get into. The way it works is you have 4 different spices. They actually have names, but we're going to say level 1, 2, 3, and 4. So you start out with a few level 1 cubes, and if you're later in the turn order, you may start out with a level 2 cube. You play cards to level up your cubes, and the higher level cubes allow you to buy point cards. So once you have a certain number of cubes, you can buy point cards, and you take those.
The point cards,
yep,
yes.
Yep. But you also have the option of getting, whether power cards or...
They're called merchant cards, and they allow you to trade one kind of cube for another kind of cube in varying arrangements. So you can trade down from a high grade spice to get a lot of lower ones, or you can trade lots of lower ones to get a high grade, and the ratios are just kind of all over the place, and you're looking at the different kinds of cards and trying to guess which one is going to help you out.
Yep. Yeah, because you have 3 different kinds. Most of them are the trading, trading 2 red cubes for 3 green and 4 yellows or something like that. Some of them are upgrade, where it's just like you get to upgrade 3 cubes. So any 3, just move them a step up the ladder. And then there is the just give me cubes card. And you start out with one that's an upgrade 2 cubes and one that's give me 2 yellow cubes. So you always have something. And the other thing that's cool about this is it's a hand management game.
Yes.
So as you pull the trading cards up, you're filling your hand. But as you're playing them, you're putting them on the table and you don't get to play them again unless you rest. And then you get all the cards back. And when none of us really wanted to rest, every time we rested, we're like, oh man, I'm skipping my turn.
It's like a turn wasted. Yeah. But I had this great, after a while, kind of engine going where I had give me a bunch of yellow cubes and then turn all my yellow cubes into green cubes and then change all my green cubes into this weird variety of cubes. And I was just throwing, but then I was like, well, now I want to do that again. So I have to rest. Yep. And it slows you down a little bit.
Yep. Well, that's the fun thing of this game is building that engine. And it's like, oh, if I get these pieces and these pieces, I'll have this amazing engine. And once you really get it going, that's when you're like, yeah, I'm doing it. I'm beating everyone. And, you know, it did move very quickly. Like I liked it. It was very easy for me to get into. It wasn't overly complicated. Sometimes overly complicated games can really do me in, but I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, yeah, honestly, you start out with 2 cards and this is what this card does. This is what that card does. And everything else, the iconography on it is very obvious. Like oh, okay, this makes sense, and I'm trying to get points. The first person that gets 5 point cards ends the game, and then you tally points. There's certain places where you can get bonus points if you get cards in certain columns and stuff. And we played this with Christy.
Yeah.
So one of the listeners, we
shout out to Christy.
Hi, Christy. Thanks. She also then taught us Pandemic Iberia.
Yes.
Which was also fun. But that's an older game. We're talking about a new game. but yeah, so it was, there was a lot to this game, and I can't wait to actually play it again. I also can't wait because it's the first in a series. So they're going to have multiple centuries of the game, and each century they focus on a different thing that is specific about that century. So I don't know what this particular century is. It's during the spice trade.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Sometime in the past. but I want to see it go all the way to like the far future where you're trading in atomic energy or something. I don't know. But I guess the mechanics are going to be very different. It's not going to just be the same game rethemed. But we're
interested to see
out
what they do.
Yep. Let's talk about Renfair.
Okay.
So this one, we just walked by. The art looked interesting. And then Kitty and I tried to play it. So Atlas Games.
So this is a game. You start with your character. Your character has 6 slots, and you are trying to dress yourself to go to a Renaissance fair.
Using transparent cards.
So they have little outfits printed. It's very like a paper doll where you're putting your outfit on your character, and it has little slots that show you when you filled that. To buy your costumes, you have to earn coins. Oh. So my biggest complaint about this game is that it doesn't come with coins. It's like, grab some pennies from your pocket. And I'm like, I don't have any pennies.
That's really like skimping on the material. Yeah. It's like, you guys, I'm sure you'll have some coins somewhere in your house.
Well, it comes in a double deck box, and half the cards are clear and half the cards are these cards we're about to describe to you, because it gets more interesting.
Okay.
So to earn your coins, you have to play a performance card. I almost want to pull out some of these performance cards here. I'm going to pull just one at random from the deck. Yep. And this is the self-appointed anachronism police. Effect: the player of this card chooses a specific costume slot or icon. Everyone must discard all the costume cards with that. Oh, this isn't so bad.
No.
All right, let's
try. We gotta get it better.
You had some all party right ones where you actually had to like
they're
jump
more
off
the stuff. Yeah. So, unattended children will be devoured is the name of this card. Task: touch your tongue to your nose with no hands. Reward: earn 1 coin from the purse. Penalty: give 1 of your coins to a player of your choice. Hooligans: choose another player to thumb wrestle. The winner of the is the player who keeps their opponent's thumb immobile for 3 seconds. They gain the reward. The winner earns 1 coin from the purse. They also take the extended performance card of their choice from the next player. Yep. So,
an extended performance can be like flipping coins a bunch of times and trying to get all heads. And depending on how many times it took you to get all heads, then you get that many coins based on that. There was one, and you can discard your cards and draw up to new ones. There was one that was jump up and down. Your feet must leave the ground until your next turn. If you don't, then you owe a coin. Otherwise, take a coin from the bank.
Task: before reading this card aloud, shout "God save the Queen." Reward:
I love that
you
card
and the first person to respond by shouting back "God save the Queen" both earn 1 coin from the purse.
So this turned into what we didn't know at first. So the concept of like dressing your character, because these are like college kids, like 4 different college kids are going to the Ren Fair and they have to dress themselves in a Ren Fair costume. So that concept was immediately, I want this game. And then we start reading the cards like, oh, Kitty and I are playing this like together in the middle of the game hall. And
we're not doing
maybe
this.
Maybe we're not going to do this one or that one.
It seems like a kind of game you have to have had a couple of drinks and kind of like be at a party, kind of in that kind of karaoke mood. But I love the silliness of it. It sounds great.
Yeah, and that's Ren Fair. I have to say, it has a lot of character, and it's not the right game to play on a Friday morning in the middle of a, you know, game hall, but it is the kind of game to play on a Friday evening in the deception room later.
Oh, yeah.
Since there's already a lot of yelling.
Yeah, we can totally do that.
Yep. So, Josh, what? Oh, you should talk about Werewords.
Oh, Werewords. Yeah, great game. It actually reminds me a lot of the game Insider. Which is So it's a word game, where words, but with a little bit of social deduction thrown in. Very quick, very easy to play. So the idea is that, a bit like 20 questions, one person comes up with a word or is given a word by the game, and then they are going to have to relay that information to the other people who are guessing. However, you have some of those werewolf-type social deduction roles. So you have a werewolf who is evil and is trying to guess who the seer is. The seer also gets to see the word that the explainer gets to see. And so the seer is trying to help the group along to guess this word, but not help it so much that the werewolf knows who the seer is. So very quick rounds, you know, 2 minutes, and it just adds a lot more spice into that really age-old game of, you know, 20 questions. It's kind of adding that extra weight a second. Yeah. Who was the evil guy? Who was helping us along? And it's you know, you can just throw it out in a party, and there's even an app to help you along and kind of do all this.
Well, you have to use the app.
Yeah.
Yep. Because what happens is one of you gets dealt randomly the mayor card, and the mayor is the person that is essentially the person saying yes or no to your 20 questions. It's 20 questions with werewolves is really what this game is. So the mayor gets the card, and the app will say, everyone, go to sleep. Mayor, wake up and touch your roll. Because the mayor could be the werewolf or the seer, or just a normal villager. But oftentimes, especially in smaller games, they're going to be the werewolf. And so they'll get a slightly harder thing. Now, the interesting thing about this is if the group does guess the word, then the werewolf gets to try to find the seer. If the group doesn't guess the word, then the seer gets to try to find the werewolf. The mayor, being the seer, if you can figure out who the werewolf is, it may be fine that you don't guess the word because you know who the werewolf is, and vice versa. So there's a lot of like nuance to this. We've talked to a couple people on this, and we were all playing with easy words. So I think, you know, one of our words was mirror, you know, which was
the other option was wildflower. And I was like, okay, flower's easy. Wildflower? Yeah. How are we going to do this without me saying anything?
Yeah. And the mayor has tokens, yes, no, and maybe tokens. So they can't say anything. They can only give yes, no, and maybe tokens. And when they're out of tokens, they can't do anything more.
It ends the game.
Yeah. You basically click the button that says out of tokens. And then the game's over. But it's, the hard words were things that we didn't even know what they were. Like, because it gives you like a list of 5 words. So we're like, oh, what does very hard look like? What is that even? Or something that's crazy, like, you know, a touchdown celebration. You know, it's like, how am I going to 20 questions that? So there's a lot of level to it. But the harder the word, the more difficult, more easy it is for the werewolf to get to the end. But then if he doesn't get the word, then the seer is going to try to guess the werewolf. So it makes it harder for the werewolf, the harder the word is. So anyway, it's a really cool game, and it's one you can get a hold of. We've been talking about Insider for, I don't know, it seems like months.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a good version of Insider. It's a social deduction game where it doesn't feel like you're like blaming anyone.
No, I like it. And I like that it has the yes, no, maybe tokens, because we are really bad at maybe, I don't know, sometimes when we play Insider. So you are kept to those answers. Yep.
So that's werewords, Bezier Games. Let's see. All right. I have a hard time saying this, but is it
Scheherazade? Scheherazade is the figure from 1001 Tales, the Arabian Tales. So she's the one who's telling the story to the king every night, and she wants to, you know, keep him on a cliffhanger. So in this one, you are telling a story, and you are doing it by placing tiles on the table. This is a one-player game or a two-player co-op game. And I had a lot of fun with this one. So if you want to talk, Chris, you played it with me.
Well, this one here, I did not actually expect anything of it. So this is the fun thing about walking around with new people. The kitty was stopping at all of these kind of Arabian arts things, these Renaissance art looking things. Tournament at Camelot is very Renaissance art looking. And I would have never given it a second glance because it's just not the art style I'm attracted to. Even Spice Road isn't really an art style. And, you know, if I see a caravan, I'm probably like, eh. this one I heard something about, so I was like, okay. But so Scheherazade. We'll get into my pronunciations of city names later, maybe.
Oh, you wait.
Oh, it's, you just glossed over Pandemic Iberia. Like, that didn't happen.
Chris knows he's going to get a city name wrong. So instead of getting it slightly wrong and sounding silly, he rather get it really, really wrong for comic effect. I can't even remember what you were coming up with, like Hubba Bub Bubba Gum and all sorts of crazy stuff.
That was the name Bilbo of the Baggins. City. Bilbo Baggins is a classic city in Iberia. I know it is. It's right on the board. But anyway, this game that I'm not even going to say anymore because you guys are mean. Comes with tiles, and the art on it is very, you know, like it's Arabian-ish.
It is Arabian.
And it's just a stack of tiles. If you're here, you see it, or if you see it on YouTube, this is it. This is the whole game. And I would have walked by this without even giving it.
I do really like the art.
It's
really fun art. It has almost a tarot look to it. All of the cards are supposed to be kind of a typical story theme. So there's little fun.
Yeah, there's bits pictures on it. Yeah. And when I heard it was a story game, I figured, okay, this is one of those lay it down, tell a story, and come up with the best story, judge it. Everyone's kind of – it's not like that at all. The story mechanic is a concept. There's no actual stories being said, although you could follow the pictures, but there's always the same thing. So the way this works is you have four different colors.
Yes.
And they're numbered from 1 to 21. And the different cards have different numbers – obviously. But the stories, like the blue cards, all have 1, 5, 8, 11, 14, and 20. That's their numbers. And you want to get all the blue cards touching each other in a row. And you want to put all the other cards in their order as well. So what happens is you end up getting this board that's usually, you know, three high in a duo game or up to four high in a solo game. And you can go as wide as you want. But you have to be able to follow the numbers from left to right. And anytime you have a color pattern in there, you get to score those points. So if I have, you know, in this case, blue can score up to 6 points. If I have four of them together, I get 4 points for it. And you're just trying to get as many points as you can in two rounds.
And it gives you fun little categories on the back of the scorecard. I think if you win, the king gives you different comments based on how well you did. Like, you have potential. A stirring story indeed. I'm not crying, you're crying.
So it kind of reminds me of Hanabi and their scoring. So you're trying to, there's a maximum score you can get, which is 21 points. So if you do two perfect rounds, that's 42 points. After the first round, you keep one of your columns and you pick up all of the other cards and you start again. So you have two cards in hand. You can play one, you can swap one, and then you have to play two on your next turn. And you're just kind of playing back and forth with each other if you're playing the co-op. This one also is a solo game. Like there's not a lot, like solo games a lot of times have a lot of fiddly bits. This is, you just pull it out and it's like playing solitaire.
It's like solitaire. Yeah.
So highly recommended. What is the name of the game?
Scheherazade.
And who is it by?
Osprey Games.
Wow. That's nice.
I remember this because I'm looking right at The Lost Expedition, which is, you stopped to pick that one up. You'd heard some hype about The Lost Expedition. You thought it would be fun. And I saw like, drawn to this little purple cute box immediately.
Yep.
Over your shoulder.
Well, and this is kind of the same art style that I would normally go by. Not go by as in B-Y-B-U-Y, but go by as in B-Y.
Walk past.
So the way this one works, though.
And the Lost Expedition.
The Lost Expedition. I've watched the Watch It Play It on this because it was getting a lot of hype. And I'm like, what is about this? It has giant cards.
They're huge.
These cards have different. First of all, you're trying to get from the beginning of the forest to the end of the forest. That's the goal. And you have characters that are marching through the forest. And you're trying to get the characters not to die. Now, to do that, your characters have different skills. And you're going to come up with encounter cards. And everyone's going to draw, I believe it's 8 encounter cards. And in order, you're going to, well, not in order, but in turn order, you're going to go around. And you're each going to play an encounter card. And then you have to look at the encounter cards. Some of them require certain skills. Some of them give you rewards. You want to put them out in an order that, you know, makes sense for your characters. Then you all start working together to say, okay, well, if we do this, we can get here. And you're trying to get through and advance to the end of the game, obviously. But you do it in such a way that it's this co-op-y feel, but this adventure through the jungle, and the pictures tell the story. So there's no story to the game itself, except for when you're looking at the pictures and you're looking at the names. Kalapalos, I'm just making that up. here's a clearing, which is just a camp. It gives you camping icons. The path ahead, you know, so there's a lot of inspiration to, like, come up with your own story
this
as you're going
supposed through. To be based off the... Lost City of Zed, Percy Fawcett expedition, where they're looking for El Dorado or the Gold City. It's fun.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I read the back of the box.
Didn't they make a movie about that or something?
They did.
What did you think?
It was not my favorite movie, but Robert Pattinson was surprisingly good in it.
He had
a beard. You can find him behind his beard.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice it was him for half the movie, but yeah.
Oh, right. We were just looking. You said he was the lead in Twilight, right?
Yeah.
Yep. I've not seen Twilight. That's a lie. I saw the first one.
we weren't going to call you on it.
But yeah, so Osprey Games, these are two really cool co-op games. Again, we haven't played The Lost Expedition yet. We are going to play it probably not today, but tomorrow, along with Masters of Orion. And there's the other one, The Banishing. The Banishing, I will talk about. This is another WizKids small box game. They've been coming up with a lot of these small box game. So Burke's Gambit is kind of the same thing, and I picked it up from, and I really loved Burke's Gambit. There's also Rock Paper Wizard, which is you're making like spell symbols. It's Rock Paper Wizard shoot, and you make a symbol of a spell. That's not The Banishing. The Banishing I picked up for mostly selfish reasons, all about the art.
Well, it looks a lot like the art looks like what I'd imagine would be on your game that you've made recently.
Which is exactly why I picked it up.
Exactly. And I know we've been going around and looking at art, really cool games with really cool art, and being like, oh, let's find out the artist who did that, so that when you produce your game, you can phone them up, email them, whatever. So I can see that you're excited about finding good artists this convention.
Yeah. Well, and then I was kind of surprised when I opened it up. I'm like, oh, this looks like a game I want to play.
Right.
It seems very complicated to me. I don't know. I tried reading these rules early this morning, so maybe I wasn't all the way awake, but I don't know. There's a lot of undead and wizards and characters and cards, and I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, to get insight into my psyche, I have no idea how this game plays, but I'm super excited about it for a number of reasons. Number one, there are character cards. I can be a sorcerer, a cultist, a brute, a bard, a healer, I'm almost done, a thief, a fighter, and a witch. And I'm like, oh, I can be different things. And then there's art on here, which is red, green, blue, which for my game is fire, water, and earth, which I think is probably what this is as well. Again, I have not read the rules of this game because insight into why I buy games sight unseen.
This is why you have a problem, Chris.
Public service announcement. Don't do what Chris does.
Don't be a Chris.
you will save more money. But the game basically just comes with these cards with the different symbols, three different symbols, square, circle, and triangle. Artistic square, circle, and triangle. It's kind of open square, circle, and triangle. But they come in different colors, and apparently you should probably do something with these. So
you're trying to play them into a circle to banish a demon, is what I got from my glance over of the rules.
Well, I like that then.
Before you die. That's like, it's like countdown to death.
Some cards have skeletons on it.
So yeah, they're the undead.
Yeah. And they're level 1 through 4. That seems cool.
This is like our Gloomhaven unboxing all over again.
Oh, wait. Number 5 has a vampire on it.
Yeah.
So I never have to play this game. I just like all the stuff.
Oh, boy.
I like components. But there's also armor and shields and wands. Nope. There's just two of each of those things. But otherwise...
I think you should contact the artist, though. I mean, it's really cool art. And at least scout out the games that you like, and because I know your game Primal Rush, you know, you've created a prototype. You brought it with you, didn't you?
Oh yeah.
So if people want to play it and it happen to be here, just get hold of Chris. He'll teach you how to play. I'm sure we could get a game together tonight in the Werewolf Room.
I plan on like being. Well, I think there's a demo area somewhere. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm gonna go to the demo area and be like, hey, come play this, because I need some blind playtesting thing.
Well, you got me to play it, and I was actually surprised, because when you first told me you were going to make a game, like, I know you know so much about games, but I was a bit apprehensive. I was like, yeah, but what if it's terrible, and I have to, like, tell him it's terrible or lie and pretend it's good? And then you got me to play it, and I was like, this is actually a really good game. I was like really surprised. No offense, yeah. But
I was really surprised.
But like, you know, for someone to just take a whack at their first game and just and for it to be good, I just wasn't expecting that. So
no, your check's in the mail. Like,
yeah. So yeah, I really enjoy it. People should give it a go if they can get a hold of you and yeah. play it. But at some point, you're gonna do something like Kickstarter. Yeah. Or
maybe next year, this time, I'll be talking about my game as one of the new games I just tried out.
Yeah.
But I'll act like it wasn't me, because I'm sure, you know, it'll be published by some, probably by, you know, Level 99 or something cool like that. Yeah. They'll rename it.
Stronghold yeah. Games will come in, yeah. snap you up.
Yeah, and I'll be like, yeah, I don't know what this game is, but it's really cool. I would get it. Yeah, the art's awesome.
So we've got two games here on the table we haven't discussed yet.
Yeah, we're leaving Baron Park to last.
Okay, so we need to talk about Pengaloo. this is a game I picked up for my niece from Blue Range. They have a ton of really fun, cool kid games for a variety of ages. This one is ages 4 and up. I think the youngest I saw there was going all the way down to 3 years, going all the way up to games aimed more for middle school ages. Some really cool dexterity games and stuff. But Pengaloo here is a matching game where you roll two die with colors on them and you try to match the color inside your penguin, the penguin's egg, with the color on the die. And if you get one match, you get to put the penguin in your score area. And if you match both of your dice, then you get to move both of them and have another turn.
I remember when we were in this section, you looked at a few games and you were like, oh, what do you think? You know, I'm going to get this for someone, I imagine it's a family member, extended mm-hmm. family member, which one should I pick? And the penguins just look cool. Like there's this cool, cute style to them. And it was just like immediately like that one looks awesome.
They look really fun. It's very colorful. It's an all wooden piece game. So it's really nice for families.
Much was it?
It was $20. Yeah. They're very reasonably priced. Yeah. And I think you kind of have to be when you're doing games for 4 to 6-year-olds because they're going to grow out of them pretty quick. Mm. This game does have some skill variation to make it a little bit harder for kids who are kind of getting bored with the basic level. But it's still, you know, it's a penguin matching game.
Yeah.
How hard are you going to get?
But once you're done playing it, you can put the penguins all over the house.
They are really cute.
Because they're adorable. Yeah, in this particular booth, they had like a lot of different things where you could launch things.
Tons of launchers, tons of dexterity stuff, really fun, lots of like fine motor pinching and what are the tweezers? There you go. Some tweezer microbe games, some really cool kind of educational fun stuff.
They had an elephant, hungry, hungry hippo type of thing where you had like an elephant gun.
It wasn't a gun. It did not shoot anything. It was a grabber. It picked them up.
It looked like a gun, and little kids were going to shoot each other with the elephant gun, I assure you.
But well, they don't launch anywhere. You'd have a really hard time.
No, so what you do is you take the elephant gun, and there's a bowl of marbles, and you take the elephant gun, and you're trying to like push down the marbles and catch the things to put the trunk, get a trunk full of marbles. Then you turn over the elephant gun, and you pull the trigger. It's a slide, but still it looks like a trigger, and then all the marbles fall out. This is a great idea.
You are children. Supposed to be
I think the designers would be so happy to hear your description of the game. I think it's going to sell it really well to the parents out there.
It's supposed to be a pattern recognition game where you get a card and you're supposed to fill your trunk with the marbles in the right order on your card.
Nobody's going to be looking at the card. You have elephant guns and marbles. It's amazing. But yeah.
One of us doesn't teach preschool.
All right, fine. I'm going to get it for me. All right. And now I want to talk about, wait, what was Pengolo?
Pengaloo.
Pengaloo.
Like penguin igloo.
All right. That's not the elephant gun game.
Pengaloo.
Yeah, I think the elephant gun game is called Elephant Guns Are Us, but it might be something different. I'm not sure.
Get ready for the lawsuit, Chris.
I know.
What if there isn't an Elephant Guns Are Us, that's going to be my next game. Okay. So Josh is going to be surprised by it. He's like, elephant guns are kind of cool.
I'll invest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Kitty's dying over here. It's okay.
So Baron Park.
So you, and by you, I'm pointing to my size, which is Kitty and Josh. You guys have not played this one yet.
No, nope. I've heard of people that have played it, and it sounds very good, and it sounds a little bit similar to Patchwork, but not entirely.
In fact, it is very similar to Patchwork in its simplicity to learn, mm-hmm. In the tile laying, so it's these Tetris piece tiles, which are becoming all the rage. I'll touch a little bit on Gloomhaven, Founders of Gloomhaven, which is also a tile, like a Tetris tile laying game, way more complex than Baron Park. But Baron Park, the idea here is you're building a bear park. Baron Park is, I believe, German for bear park. And you can play up to 5 players, and each of the starting player cards has a different language on each side. So I gave Sydney the English and whatever foreign language on the other side, so she puts it to English. And she looks over at my card, and she sees that it's not on the English side. It's like, oh, you need to turn it to the English side. And like, they're all different, which is cool, because it's just like 8 or 10 different ways of saying bear park. There are polar bears, panda bears, koala bears, and some other kind of bear.
It looks like a brown bear or a grizzly bear or something.
Well, on the front. I don't know. He's a friendly bear. But I my name for it is polar bears and pandas. So because I think they're just adorable. So the way this game works is you're trying to build the best bear park. Mm-hmm. And you start out with a square piece of land, and you have one tile, and you place it. It could be a bathroom, it could be a park, or it could be a food stand, right. And you place it someplace. And if you cover up a particular building piece, you get to take another piece from the board. If you're the first person to take that piece, you get the highest point version. And each time another person takes, you get a lower and lower value on that particular piece. So either you cover up, take a piece, cover up, take a piece, and you just keep doing that until your board is full. And then you get to take a bear statue and put it down in the middle of your little park piece. The first person to fill up 4 park segments ends the game. And then you count up the points and see who wins. It is really easy to learn. It's really fun. It's probably, it's going to be a gateway game of choice for, you know, the foreseeable future. And it's super cute. Like I said, it's polar bears and pandas. They should have called it polar bears and pandas. Like, they would have sold a zillion copies. As it is, they're only going to sell probably a quarter zillion copies. So either way, they're good. But yeah, so that's Baron Park by the
Someone.
What is the M logo? Say it out loud. Mayfair. All right. See, Mayfair. This is why we have a live audience. I should have known that. Yeah. Anyway, they do good games, I hear. I don't know. They also do Catan, right? Do they still do Catan? They sold it, right? Yeah, Asmodee. Asmodee has everything. So we do not Asmodee. Have any Asmodee games up here.
We were looking good for the small gems, the out there. Yeah, not exactly. Everyone's going to pick it up games.
Yep. So. Baron Park's not that one. Everyone's going to pick that up. And Century Road or Century Spice Road. I'm just going to call it Century Road. Century Spice Road is another one. So those are the two big ones that are the origin releases that I think everyone's going to be picking up and everyone's going to be talking about. And I will say from experience of playing both of them, they're definitely worth picking up. They're more on the lighter casual side. Both of them will play in under an hour. Even with maximum number of players. Century might play just over an hour with 5 players, but it just moves so fast. You take a single turn and you go, a single turn and you go. So I can't recommend those high enough.
I believe it ends faster. I think it's a lower number of point cards to end the game with more players.
If you have more players?
Yeah.
Yep. So, but yeah, both of them I think are fantastic. So we have some input from our listeners, a few questions about Origins, that we do this. We have a Board Game Geek podcast page, and every week I put in there, hey, input on the next episode. So this is where this is coming from. If you're sitting in the audience, I'm just literally on Board Game Geek right now, like I am most all the time. So Terrence asks about any new information on Firefly games, which we talked to Gale Force 9. They do Firefly. There is no new information on Firefly here, but I do have information on Star Trek Ascendancy. There were supposed to be 2 new expansions coming out last year in November, December area, the Ferengi and the Cardassians. Not the Kardashians, the Cardassians. although I think the Kardashian expansion would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'd play it.
Yeah. So they missed their window for the China printing window. And apparently in China, they just say, hey, yeah, no, you're good, you're good, you're good. And like, oh, no, we haven't started building that yet. So that's sort of what happened. So now these expansions aren't going to come out until July, which is almost a full year after where they were hoping originally. But on the upside, the Borg are going to come out about a month afterward. And this particular game is a three-player only game right now. With the expansions, you can go up to five players. With the Borg, you can go solo play or two players because the Borg take on this AI mechanic to it. This game, Josh and I played it last Gen Con, and it's just been waiting to get these expansions.
It's so a very epic 4X game. Yes. We sat down for many hours, but it was
huge.
Good fun.
Yeah, six hours we played this game. Yeah. The designer swears that you should be able to play the game in 2.5 hours. It took us six. We were playing with Josh. But that's I'm not sure it's entirely Josh's fault.
I know. I mean, Chris is alluding to the fact that we had a moment towards the end where our other
4 hours in.
Yeah, our player had basically won, but not fully. And Chris, by this point, was like, well, we've basically lost, and was like alpha playing the game and was like, look, you can win right now, okay? You're either going to win right now or you're going to win in 2 hours' time, and I'd rather you just did it now. And she was like, no, but I want to do it this way. And like Sydney's like, Chris, stop doing this. You always do it. Just let her play. Stop alpha playing. And you just couldn't help yourself.
The irony of it is that's our newest patron, Jen.
Jen, wait, I love
you. So Jen, you probably remember this exact moment. Where Chris was just such an ass.
So Jen was our only patron for this month only. So that's how that works. But no, it was one of those games where you get so involved in it. And I was the Federation in that one. And about 4 hours in, I did a particular move that lost me the ability to actually do anything. Because the Federation can only influence people. But I had lost the ability to gain influence. So I just did nothing at all. So I just wanted Jen to kill Josh and be done with it, right? So that was the reason. I'm just trying to rationalize it.
Yeah. Maybe she'll forgive you.
Maybe. Sorry, Jen. But anyway, what the moral of the story is, if you like this game, it doesn't really take 6 hours. It will take you a little bit of time at the beginning. It has a really cool board. If you like Star Trek or Space 4X-y stuff, it's good. And by Gen Con, you'll have a 1 to 5 player version of it. But no Firefly information. Sorry, Terrence. Maybe at Gen Con. Christy, she actually posted this after she left yesterday. She only could stay for one day. She only could stay on Thursday. But she said had she stayed around, she would have hung out around the Renegade booth because she's looking for Flatline, a Fuse Aftershock game. Fuse is a time-based, I don't want to call it dexterity, but you get a card. You get several cards, actually, and you're rolling dice, and you're trying to make the dice and the patterns on the card, and everything's timed, and you're trying to get through as many cards as you can, working with everybody, so that you can defuse your cards and then work through all of the cards.
Sounds frantic.
It is very frantic. It's hard. Right. It's really hard because you have stacking dice and, you know, dice numbers and sequences and colors, and you're working with everyone else, and you're rolling the dice like, no, I need this die, and,
right,
and you have 10 minutes to solve it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if that's the kind of game for it. Now, Flatline takes that concept and puts it in, you're trying to save a patient. So you're trying to keep the patient from dying.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
And it's kind of the same mechanic. I haven't played it, but from what I've heard of it, is it adds a little bit more to Fuse to make it, it's a better game from what I've heard. Like, right, most people find it a little bit more interesting. But I think Fuse is actually really good too. Again, I've owned it. You can play it solo. It's really, really hard solo.
Okay.
So I've played it solo a couple times. She also mentioned Flip Ships and Sentient, which I have no information about whatsoever.
But it sounds cool.
Yes. But if Christy is telling us to check it out, you should check it out. She knows more about games than I do. She should probably do a podcast. Christy, if you want to be on the podcast, let me know. I might be looking to replace. No, I'm not. I'm not going to replace it.
Just add more people.
Guest spots. There's always guest spots. Caleb, I'm sorry I wasn't able to satisfy your request. Caleb lives in Australia, and he wanted me to call out his name as the winner of Mechs vs. Minions. But
sorry.
Next time, I will also be a fair drawing as to who wins. But keep entering, Caleb. It can't. Eventually, it'll work. So that's our origins. Like, what do we want to check out next, though? Because we know we're going to bring Spencer to the Werewolf Room, and that's going to be entertaining to
I'm
us.
I'm interested, because he's not a big fan of these kind of games. No. So I told him, like, his personality in that game, I'm interested to see how it goes down. I think he'll be a hard person to beat.
I'm really imagining him just sitting there, sitting back. He's like, no, I'm not a wolf.
Yeah, but, or just being grumpy at other people. I've seen that too. He's doing it right now. He's looking really scared. Really scared. He's got this steely look in his eyes.
Yeah. He gets to like lynch you. We have to let him know that it's just in game terms.
I know, it's over. but no, I playing more werewolf. I mean, I really like that, the whole deception thing. I mean, people come to these things for different things. Sometimes people have like really specific, you know, I come for the true dungeon, or I come for the, you know, the deception room or the social deduction stuff. Like last year was my first year, and it was such a cool intro into the hobby, because I'd only really just been starting for a year. And, you know, it's just so social and friendly, and it kind of showed me how friendly and open the hobby is. And I met some really cool people in my first, you know, weekend of playing werewolves. Met Alyssa and Derek, who are lovely people and I'm friends with today. And just a year later, it's like we're picking up from where we left off. So it's like a good example of how, you know, if you're not in the hobby and you're just getting into it, like you can just come to one of these conventions and there's always something for you.
Well, we should mention, like, last year was your first convention and this year you're wearing a press badge.
I know. How far I've risen. I'm just, I feel so important with this thing.
If anyone wonders what the press badge at Origins gets you, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing at all.
Except the prestige.
Except for the prestige.
I have a press ribbon. Yeah.
Technically, we can. Kitty does not have a press ribbon and she's bitter about this. They would only give me
she's
two.
She's pulling a face.
You snooze, you lose. Yeah. I had to come late. I didn't get the ribbon.
Next year, we'll pull some strings. So, Kitty, what do you think? Now, you've been here for 2 days. What are the next 2 days going to look like?
I'm probably going to do more wandering, more exploring. I think my favorite part of this has been finding the games that I'm not going to see other places, finding the small, hidden, fun stuff that I wouldn't, that maybe doesn't appeal to Chris, that wouldn't end up on our podcast or played on our tables if it was left up to Chris to pick all the games.
Which is a good point, because normally, we've talked about it before, normally I'm the one that buys the games. It's my game collection that we go from. And if you guys are just saying, oh, Chris has 2-3 more games this week, why should I go out and buy any games? It makes sense that it's going to be mostly the stuff that appeals to me that I introduce you guys to. So I didn't really think of that, but yeah, that's a great thing, because again, you know, 4 or 5 of the games on this table right now, I would have never picked up, but I'm really glad we did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to just doing more demos. I typically don't demo games because I just kind of go and I'll just watch over someone's shoulder. But we played Potion Explosion for the first time in
exploding
a demo.
Exploding potions.
Exploding potions. Like I said, Panda Bears. And we have better names for these games. So we played that. Oh, we played, what was the other one?
We played Spoils of War. That was a really fun dice pool game where you do some betting.
Well, Spoils of War is like Liar's Dice with a betting mechanic and a bit, like it adds, from bluffing adds to the betting. So you can kind of bet on which side of the challenge wins and you're trying to collect artifacts and stuff. So it's kind of Viking themed Liar's Dice.
We played Raise Your Goblets, which was super fun. You're trying to poison your opponents. You're given a random card at the beginning of the round, and that's who you're trying to kill. And you're throwing all these wine and antidote and poisons out on the table and moving the goblets around and trying to find out if you're poisoning yourself, if you're poisoning your opponent, and if you get the most wine or the scoring.
Yeah, and there's a bit of a press your luck in it. So essentially what you're doing, you're dropping little beads that represent the wine, the poison, and the antidote. But at some point, if nobody has any wine left, they can call for a toast. And then everyone drinks the wine in front of them. And depending on whether or not there's more poison than antidote, you may die. But if you killed the person you wanted to kill, you still get points for that. But yeah, that was a lot of – again, one of those things I would not have even thought about. But we're walking by and someone's like, hey, you want a demo? And I'm like – we're not saying no. We're going to demo anything that we're asked. And it was like a really good surprise.
I did not wear great shoes. So I feel like I'm influencing Chris by being like, oh, look, an open table. Let's sit.
But it's a good motivation to sit. And that was from Cool Mini or Not, or Simon these days. And that was Raise Your Goblets. Let's see, we talked about pretty much all this.
I think we hit our whole list here.
Gloomhaven. All right. Founders of Gloomhaven. So I talk about Gloomhaven all the time, and I love Gloomhaven. So Isaac's next game is going to be Founders of Gloomhaven. Founders of Gloomhaven is a prequel to Gloomhaven, but has nothing to do with Gloomhaven. It's not a story or adventure or whatever. It is a tile laying resource management building game. It has the same kind of mechanic where you have a top action, bottom action on the cards, so you can decide how to use the cards. And it has the Tetris-y tiles and stuff. It's still in prototype form, but I was watching them play it, and it looks really, really cool. So I can't wait to see that and actually get that in my hands and play it. As soon as that's on Kickstarter, you know me, I will let you know. I may have one or two copies of this, so we'll see. But yeah, so we play, and we being Sydney and I, play with our friend Sarah. Sarah's not a huge fan of point games. There's a point track around the board of Founders of Gloomhaven. She loves Gloomhaven, but doesn't like the point track concept. So I'm like, this is one you're going to try because it's Gloomhaven. And she did not respond to me one way or the other. But I think that's just her saying, yes, I know.
So, sounds like a yes.
Yeah, seems like a yes to me. We don't have a lot of time left, but do you guys have any questions? Like, and it's fine if not. I'm pretty sure three of you are sleeping. I have,
or just interesting points or things that you've seen. Yeah.
What have you seen that we haven't talked about?
Yeah,
nothing. All right, I have a question. Who has listened to this podcast before today? Sydney and Spencer, you don't count.
All right.
And just out of my curiosity, and really, no pressure, who's going to listen to it after today?
Oh, yay! Total pressure.
Total pressure.
Peer pressure works, everyone.
It's fine.
No.
All 50 people raised their hands.
All 50. Yeah. Wow.
Good work, Chris.
We have a little, yes, I like the 50. So,
what were your favorite games that you played, or if you had to pick one favorite of everything you've played so far?
That's tricky. Mine's got to be Witch Hunt. I'm going to throw it down there. Yep. Simple.
Witch Hunt. I like Witch Hunt. What about you, Kitty?
I'm going with Scheherazade because now that's going to be my go-to solo game.
Let's see. If I'm doing one favorite of just the ones I've played here, and darn it, I wish I played Master of the Orion because somehow I just feel like that's going to be my thing. But of the ones I've played, I would say Spice Road is probably my favorite with a runner-up. And this is going to be counterintuitive to what you think, but I think the runner-up is Tournament of Camelot.
What?
Interesting.
I didn't think you even liked that one.
It got under his skin.
There was a thing of when you're winning, you don't get the special powers. But right now, I want to play again because I think the strategy is to lose early, get powered up, and then come from behind.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the fact that that's how you guys beat me.
Yeah.
But I want to destroy you in the other direction. So
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. But we still haven't played The Lost Expedition, Masters of Orion. Both of those we'll play, and I could change my mind. And The Banishing I may never play, but it looks really cool, and it has 8 different roles in the box. So
most Chris things said during this podcast.
It happens. All right. So if you're not, let's see, our post topic section, really just thank you, everyone. Thank our patrons. If you want to be a patron, the biggest advantage to being a patron is you get auto entered into all our contests. Every month we give something away. This month was Mechs versus Minions. Next week we'll announce the next thing we're going to give away. And it also helps me and my addiction. But now we make Josh talk a lot and just read a whole bunch of names. So
feel free to start sneaking out of the room now. Yeah.
Well, so that you can get your British voice. Yes. And that's fine. That's what I'm here for. That's how you pay me.
Yeah, so it's basically just for the voice. So also, if you're a patron, you get to torture Josh by having him read these names.
Is it too late for a question?
question?
What's your question?
Bring it on.
Are the rumors true that your accent is fake?
The rumors that my accent's fake. These have been swirling for a while, and I can neither confirm nor deny whether this is
sounds like a fake accent.
Yep.
Cheerio, chap.
That's pretty good. You're getting better.
Is that good?
Pip, pip. Well, you're up to a two from a one. So.
Pip, pip, cheerio now.
You're almost to
people are gonna
Bert and Mary Poppins level.
just stop embarrassing yourself.
Fine. All right, I'm going to hit the right button. Take us out, Josh.
All right, well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review. Email us with your comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Giljam, Shane Paul, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, C. Marie, Rudy Lou, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Wang, Mike Smith, Stefan Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, and Jennifer Engelbrecht. Until next week, when we talk about demoing games, we'll be keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. Sad thing is they don't believe that that's the way we do this every single week.